Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Fiction, science fiction, horror, fantasy, crime, LGBT, thriller.
You have now entered the House of Mystery with your hosts, Eric Shapiro, David North Martino, John Copenhaver, and Al Warren.
Heard on KCPW 106.5 FM Los Angeles,
102.3 FM Riverside,
and 1050 AM Palm Springs.
Oh my.
Okay, we are back. And joining us now, as we said before the break, we've got Randy Thomas. Thank you for taking the time to talk to us today.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me on your show.
Randy, this is quite a story. Now, the Pray Away documentary has been out for a few weeks now, I believe. So first of all, before we get really into that, how did you get involved? Let's go through some of your timeline and how it started for you with that group.
Okay. Well, I'll try to keep it abbreviated. But basically I grew up in an abusive situation. And when I was 19, I was thrown out of the house for being gay. And at that time in my life, I was out, but I was forced out of the closet and I was homeless and I really didn't have any adulting skills. So I went into a party scene that was really kind of dangerous and dark and all this kind of stuff. And so I went from one bad environment to a different bad environment, but it felt better because there was drugs involved. So I was out in the 80s, but I was not a healthy person. I eventually moved to Dallas for a change of scenery. And while there, I hit bottom on drugs and alcohol. And I joined a 12-step program that I'm not a part of today, but I do love that program for that point in my life. And while there, I became a Christian. And I do believe it was a genuine conversion. I still consider myself a Christian today. But at that time, leading up to my conversion, I just really didn't have any healthy relationships or even, I didn't even know how to balance a checkbook. So I had to learn how to be an adult quite later than you should. And right at that same time, at that vulnerable point, I became a Christian and I got exposed to this particular group that happened to be an Exodus group. And that's one of the ways that conversion therapy groups and ex-gay groups lure people in. They are attractive to vulnerable people like I was, because I was desperate for answers that I didn't know how to go get on my own, if that makes sense.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, totally. Well, so at that time, how were you feeling about yourself or how, being gay? That part of you, was that something that you didn't want to be or you thought was maybe wrong?
I knew that something was really screwed up in my life because I had made a ton of bad decisions after coming out of being thrown out of the house. And I was just looking for answers about why my life sucked so much. And I was suicidal, and it was just a terrible point. And being gay, you know, my experience in the party scene, it was really easy to scapegoat all the bad experiences that I had gone through in life on being gay. And that's what that group taught me, is that, you know, instead of just being a codependent person, which I was codependent because I was gay, which is a lie. Yes, I was codependent, but not because I was gay, but because I was human, and human are vulnerable to dysfunctional relational approaches, you know? And, but they attributed everything bad to being gay. And if I worked on all these peripheral issues, it would help me to be less gay. And so I had a ton of issues to work through that were legitimate, but none of them had to do with the fact that I was being gay, but that was what I was taught. And because I had had bad experiences, desperate for answers, I just learned to scapegoat being gay. So I didn't go into it feeling too terribly upset about being gay. But then after being in that group for a while, oh, the magical answer is this is all happening because I am gay, which was a lie.
So at that time, you thought if you could sort of cure being gay or stop being gay, so to speak, that you would become healthier, have a better life then.
Right. And add on top of that, the religious manipulation of, you know, this is what God wants you to do. This is what God wants for you. And in order for you to be a happy, healthy, whole man of faith, you have to pursue your quote unquote heterosexual potential or live a life of celibacy.
Now, you moved up pretty high in the group. Weren't you like a vice president or something in that group as well?
I did end up becoming the executive vice president of Exodus and that's the position I held when we shut it down in 2013.
How's your feeling about the group now when you look back at it? When you look back at the whole time you were with them and up until it was shut down, what's your thoughts on it?
I completely regret any moment that I spent within those groups and at Exodus. I do feel like it's a cult that lures vulnerable and hurting people like I was. And I don't have any high esteem for any part of that 22 years that I was involved in it.
Are you now in the communications you're doing now, like including this interview and the documentary, are you sort of, is the mindset that it's a counter movement? Like, in other words, you want to now disseminate the message that it is a cult and sort of undo the propaganda that's been out there?
That's part of it. You know, I know a lot of people aren't really interested in my need to make personal amends. But I feel like if I was going to be, because I was pretty out there publicly with my opinions before, I think it's only the right and responsible thing to get out there and say how my opinions and positions have changed, because I just don't think it would be right to just slink off into the woodwork, you know, and not say this was hurtful, harmful, and dangerous and deadly thing that I was involved in. I mean, this ideology killed one of my friends, and that's what ripped my blinders off. So to honor his life and his legacy, I have to tell the truth. And if I was going to be public about it before, I really feel like I should be public about it now.
And needless to say, in the meantime, there are still other organizations active that do what Exodus did, right? So there's the narrative in terms of opening people's eyes to what they're up to, correct?
Exactly. In the movie Pray Away, Michael Bussey mentions that wherever homophobia and transphobia exists, this type of conversion therapy will manifest in some particular way. And people tend to think, and it's wishful thinking, and I love the thinking of, you know, the ex-gay or conversion therapy movement died when we closed down Exodus. That's what we had hoped, but it didn't. It just redeveloped into different networks, different online efforts. And we always say when one Exodus leader, quote unquote, goes back, there are three to take their place. And that's just true for the movement as a whole.
So it's more an ideology in a sense than a given organization. It's just the set of ideas that proliferates.
Correct. Yeah, it's a stigmatizing ideology that's wrapped and undergirded, if that's the right word, with toxic theology.
I'm curious also, like, in terms of the conversion itself, quote unquote, it's one thing to try and repress or suppress being gay, which, you know, which is, of course, as we know, unthinkable and wrong. But it's also like there, it would seem like parallel to that, there's an inducing of trying to make you straight or attracted to women. And I'm really curious, like, what happens on that end of it? Like they try and convince you to be attracted to people you're not. Like, well, how does that go?
Well, it's very convoluted and hard to explain because it doesn't happen. But basically, you know, if I hear the word heterosexual potential ever again, if I never hear that word again, I would be glad to never hear that word again. But basically, there's this idea that as long as you're dealing with the peripheral issues, you'll have less reason to turn to homosexuality. Because homosexuality was considered a sin, but it was also considered, quote unquote, a reparative drive that people turn to homosexuality to numb the pain of former wounds, to indulge in sex addiction and all of these types of things that it's not. But it was considered, when people would turn to that or give in to temptation, if you can follow my lingo there, it's because they're trying to address a legitimate issue in an illegitimate way. And if you start dealing with the legitimate issues in your life, you won't have to turn to that anymore, and you can start to realize God's creative intent, quote unquote, with heterosexual relationships. And, you know, and over the course of time, I did realize that I had a smidge of bisexuality in me. I can look back on it now and say, well, yeah, I was attracted to Bo and Luke Duke of the Dukes of Hazzard, but I was also attracted to Janet Jackson, you know, and so I look back on it now and I know that I have a smidgen of bisexuality. But when I realized that during the program, or while I was in that world, I thought that that was change. That's another way that cult also is, it erases bisexual people. It thinks it's converting people when in fact it's probably ensnaring a lot of bi people.
Right. It's interesting. A lot of this also goes to labels and terms because I'm straight, but at the margins, I am attracted to men a certain amount of the time, although it's a minority of the time, which sort of begs the question of how bi any of us are. Right. And then it's like, it becomes very steeped in semantics. But if the bottom line is your centrifugal attraction is to other men, that's simply who you are. I mean, and that's, you know, it is. I can see how they, in a poisonous way, sort of manipulate that slippery slope.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I kind of, the way I explain it now is, yes, I was attracted to Janet. If Halle Berry were to show up at the door and say, hey, let's go for drinks, I'm going, you know, I'm engaged. I'm engaged, but my fiance Dan knows I'm going. But what I have with Dan, just from my makeup, can never be competed with or compared to, you know, the sexual attraction that I have towards some women. You know what I mean?
Right.
So, yeah, you're absolutely right. I totally agree.
Can you give us a sense, and Al and I were talking about this before we got on, like, how long were you in Exodus, and how long has it been since you've been out?
I was involved in Exodus for 22 years, and I came back out in January of 2015, January 12th.
Okay. Got it.
But that was, that wasn't right after we shut down Exodus. We shut down Exodus in 2013, in June of 2013.
What did you do those 2 years from 13 to 15? Were you still kind of, mindset was still kind of in the way of the pray away of Exodus, or no?
Well, it's interesting because my beliefs had been challenged for several years before we closed down Exodus. So I was already deconstructing a lot of things. A lot of the pedestals that I had built up for former friends of mine, they started crashing long before we actually closed Exodus. However, you know, once we shut down Exodus, once I did not have to herd cats all over the country with regard to Exodus leadership and donors and supporters, I mean, it went from a blizzard of noise to nothing like that. And at first it was very welcome, but then I had no idea who I was because my entire identity and what I felt I was called to do was just destroyed. It was just shut down. And so I, for the second time in my life, I was truly suicidal. But I reached out to some LGBTQ plus people who were actually frenemies or nice people to me back when I was a part of Exodus. And I just started asking inappropriate, probing, deep questions. And they were very kind and gracious to me, in engaging me in conversation. And over time, over that time between closing down Exodus and coming back out, what I really did was a moral inventory. I say that a lot, but I looked back at my life and I reclaimed what was good and what was personal growth, true, genuine growth, and incorporated that, integrated that into my current identity then. And through a long, dark night of the soul and prayer and crying out to God and all that kind of stuff, I realized that I could be a happy, healthy, whole gay person. And every person that I was kindly interrogating at that time, who was so gracious, they proved it. You know, they proved what grace and forgiveness looked like because they could have slammed the door in my face. They had every right to. I had said some terrible things publicly, but they didn't. And they showed Christ to me in a way that I had never seen actually in the church. And I'm not making that up. I'm not trying to be overly dramatic. They really were Christ to me in a way that I had not experienced before. And so then I knew that where the, you know, this is going to be some Christianese, but where the fruit of the Spirit is, there God is also. And all I got from these LGBTQ plus people who had every reason to not like me was love, grace, kindness, patience, perseverance, all of that. And so that helped me feel more solid about who I was as a gay man. And that's why I came out on January 12th of 2015.
Hey, it's interesting because all of the above adjectives you listed or things you listed in terms of grace and forgiveness and love and peace and kindness, these are, of course, things that exist on the in the ground level, real world context, but on social media, they're completely out of fashion.
Right.
So I can only imagine that in another frame, you've probably been lambasted, dogpiled, dragged, criticized. Am I correct? I didn't look, but am I accurate on that?
You are. and it's when I came out and also when the Pray Away film launched on August 3rd, I get a combination of, you know, 85, 90%, nothing but positive, kind, nice. But then I also get a lot of hate messages and emails and things like that. And when it comes from the gay community, from people who have been hurt by conversion therapy or just absolutely can't hate me, that I actually understand that. That doesn't bother me. I'm glad that they're reaching out and getting all of that out of their system. I hope it helps them in some sort of way. I understand it. You know, there are people who won't forgive me. And I look at some of the things I did in the past, and it was very hard to forgive myself for it. So how can I blame them for not, for having that sentiment? But the religious folks are what get me the most, especially former friends who should know better by now. I was an upper echelon leader. They all deferred to me. They all invited me to speak at different conferences. And as long as I was helping them find a stage to get on or promoting their resources, I was a golden boy. I was God's chosen person to be on the staff at Exodus. But the moment we started questioning all of that, they took off. They're just gone and saying really kind of horrible things. So my difficulty comes from my former friends who should know better by now, but acting like they don't.
How do you feel about the Pray Away documentary? What do you think about it now that you watch it?
I was a part of the project right at the beginning. I think I was like the first or second phone call that Christine Stelakis, the director, made. And I think it's perfect as far as a documentary goes. And I don't use that word lightly. I love how she allowed us to say our own story. She didn't narrate it. She didn't impose what we had to say. She just knew how to ask questions. And I love that every person, including the current ex-gay leader, she allowed us to speak for ourselves. And the story tells itself. It's like the film has its own voice, and she didn't impose her own on it, which a lot of documentarians do. And sometimes it works. But in this particular situation, I absolutely love that she allowed us all to speak with our own voice. And I think it adequately exposes that conversion therapy is still happening today, that it's deadly, dangerous, and destructive. And it's just a powerful film. And I'm so glad that Ryan Murphy and Netflix picked it up. And I believe it's saving lives every single day.
You know, it's interesting. What is it you hope people take away when they watch the film?
There's so much. First and foremost, it's for that vulnerable person, that person who is considering going into a conversion therapy group or going to a conversion therapist or ex-gay ministry, and they see the truth of how dangerous and destructive it is, and it changes their heart and mind to be able to know that there is a big, wide world out there. And there are a lot of resources available now for LGBTQ plus people to find their place. If they're people of faith, they can find their place in an affirming church. If they're not, they can be affirmed and loved and respected and helped in any number of ways now. And so my first concern is that. My second is that the leaders, church leaders, conservative church leaders, the religious right, when they see it, that they are convinced to stop the abuse, because this toxic theology, this stigmatizing ideology will never stop as long as the leaders are perpetuating it. So in order to stop a movement, you have to convince the current leadership to stop doing it. And that's the second most, right under there, trying to save people's lives, but also trying to convince current leadership to stop the abuse and do what I did and shut down your organization and go get a real job.
It's interesting because there's a cluster of motives, right, with the current leadership. There's the ideology, which itself has its own pulls and forces, but it's also, as you just said, in terms of getting a real job, it's monetary. I mean, if business is good, I could see the corrupting influence of them brainwashing themselves into more deeply thinking, okay, we may as well stay on this path because it's lucrative. Mm-hmm. So is that a big part of the traction it gets for them?
Absolutely. But I would say a majority of people were like myself. We weren't really in it for the money. It was nice that we got a paycheck, but I don't think that they see that they're doing it for the money, even though it was hard to shut down the organization that was paying my bills. You know, it was very difficult. And I'm not whining. I'm not complaining. I don't need pity. I shouldn't have gotten in the position in the first place. But it was incredibly difficult at 47 to have to start all over on a career. So I think whether they're conscious of it or not, getting that paycheck is a big motivator to keep the delusion going, stay in denial, and stay within that movement.
The model work is generally parents taking their.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am, but Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Kids in? Is it a lot of people themselves coming in for conversion? Is it both?
It's both, and it takes on many different forms. And that's why I'm glad that you recognize that it was an ideology, because it could be peer-based support groups meeting every Thursday night in the back room of a church. It could be a professional counselor and the parents are forcing their child to go in to see a professional counselor. And it can also be the youth pastor or the senior pastor of a particular church providing quote unquote pastoral care, but using all the same resources that are being used in the therapist's office and the peer-based support group. So it could be any number of things. And it is, it crosses all generations. Youth are a particular emphasis for conversion therapy vans, and I think that that's appropriate. But there are many, 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 many adults getting involved that I wish we could convince to not get involved.
Now, you said you were in it for 22 years. That whole time that you were in the group, did you find that you were still attracted to men?
Yes, and I got very good at blaming it on Satan and temptations. And, you know, after a while, your temptations lessen because you really trick your brain into thinking to not thinking about it. Because anytime you had any kind of attraction toward another man, you had to confess it. You had to, you know, repent and try to find the legitimate issue, as I mentioned before, and work through all of it. And it was a pain in the rear and embarrassing because of the climate to have to go to your mentor and your small group and confess that you were attracted and blah, blah, blah. But that didn't stop me from being attracted to my personal trainer in 2005. It didn't stop me from being attracted to Idris Elba. You know, and it just, and now I look back on it and it's like, there's nothing wrong with that. That's just part of who we are as human beings. But back then it carried a lot of weight and it was painful.
Did you find yourself acting out on it or did you avoid that?
No, I don't know how deep we can, how explicit I can get on the show, but I acted on it as far as masturbation is concerned. And that was a huge no-no as well. But as far as like going to bars, and living a double life, I was one of the few that never did that.
Yeah. Well, I see that because, with John Polk, you know, I guess the one that was kind of a show person for the group, he was still sort of participating, so to speak.
Correct. Yeah. He did get, busted, fleeing from a gay bar in Washington, D.C.
That's not a good thing. How do you, you know, because coming from this, like I've been partnered with a guy for over 22 years, 23 years. He grew up with the Mormon influence where they would shock him at 13, because that was kind of their conversion therapy, right? Praying wasn't enough. So there's a lot of, and watching the movie, I got a lot of, I don't know, how do you say, he was pretty angry with a lot of you guys, and he's really not happy with John Polk. How do you deal with that anger? How do you, and what can you say about things to people like that feel that anger?
Mm-hmm. Well, first of all, congratulations on your relationship. And I think that's wonderful that y'all have been together all that time. With regard to anger, one of the things that, like, when people bring that to me, I just want to listen first, because they may not want me to respond. They're just wanting to get it off their chest, and that's what's going to be most healing for them. Sometimes, where it's appropriate and they want me to, I will, you know, ask for forgiveness or apologize or make amends in whatever way is best for them. Wherever I can be a source of healing or encouragement or asking forgiveness, I try to do that as well. But I also get people who they're like, don't say a word. I'm going to give you a piece of my mind and that's going to be it. And that's fine too. I want to do whatever is best in the moment to help that person. And the only way I can do that is by listening to them first.
So what do you plan on doing now? Like, where's, you've been out of it for a while, but what do you plan on, what's your next kind of goal?
With regard to the topic or just in general?
Both, actually, just because they kind of are tied to each other, probably, I'd imagine.
Mm-hmm. They are to an extent. Well, I'll start with the topic. Wherever the door opens where I can speak out against conversion therapy and ex-gay ministry, I'll take it. I really believe in it that much. And I do that, I had an organization, but then I realized that I didn't really need an organization. I'm just me, you know, and advocating against conversion therapy is something that I'm going to do no matter what. And so wherever that door opens to be able to end conversion therapy, I want to be a part of it if it's going to be helpful. Personally, I'm getting married to Dan in October, so that's my main personal goal right now. It's less than 2 months away, but that's my personal goal. And really, I just want to live a happy, healthy, whole life, and integrate my whole life from beginning to now, and just show that it is possible. I really want people to believe that you can be a happy, healthy, whole gay person. even with as a messed up of background as I had. I think they completely overlap in the conversion therapy and ex-gay ministry world. I've said many times, there's a gospel according to conversion therapy. There are people out there who will take this one issue, and I used to be one of them, and use it as a litmus test about whether you're a real Christian or not. I believe conversion therapy and ex-gay ministry wouldn't exist if it weren't infused with that toxic theology. That's why I think it's a cult, because it goes after one particular issue with all the religious terminology, and it twists it into this worldview. And so there's a complete infusion of conversion therapy and religion in conversion therapy in the ex-gay world. As far as, like, today, I know that Christianity is so much more big than one issue, and I've done a lot of research from affirming and moderate. I mean, I knew the conservative viewpoint backwards and forwards, but I did a lot of reading from affirming sources, and I realize now that the Bible it's been misinterpreted. It was written in particular cultural contexts. And so I'm able to hold on to Jesus's teachings and my own personal spiritual walk with Christ. But now I'm more of a universalist. Like, I don't believe you're going to go to hell if you don't believe in Jesus. But I do believe he is the way, if that makes sense. But anyway, so I've been able to take the toxic ideology out of it and realize that what Christ taught is truly life-affirming in every single way. And if there's any scriptures that don't fall in line with those red letters, then that's not of God. And I don't believe that the condemnation against LGBTQ plus people, first of all, was translated correctly. But second of all, it doesn't fall in line with what Jesus actually taught.
Right. I've read some, just so I can offend as many people as possible, I've read some beautiful things about how Christ was androgynous. I mean, for what that's worth. I mean, which utterly cut across, or utterly aligned to what you just said, that it's been my speculation without knowing a heck of a lot about Christianity, that to the extent that Christianity is intolerant, it's probably been amplified or heightened or distorted because it just goes against the heart of the matter.
Exactly. And I would actually agree with you. I've been irritating a lot of people as well. We could probably start a support group on this, but I had, I believe, I don't know about androgynous for Christ, but okay. Like the Holy Spirit in Proverbs, the whole wisdom is personified as a woman. She cries out at the gate for mankind to listen to her counsel. That's God describing a part of himself as a woman and calling her counselor. The Holy Spirit is our counselor. And so for God to personify themselves, and I say them as the pronoun, because I think God transcends gender, it makes it very easy to believe that the Holy Spirit is a feminine presence. Check her out in Proverbs. And one of God's names is El Shaddai, which is the many-bosomed one. So let's go irritate a bunch of people together.
That doesn't take long. Just get me going on it, I'll tell you. I love it. Well, so it's been quite a life for you so far. One of the big things that people get upset about is the idea that being gay needs to be cured, and that you could do it by praying or by conversion or whatever means you want to do, shock, whatever. What's your thought on that? How do you answer that?
What I would say to people is that there's nothing wrong with being an LGBTQ plus person. If you're a person of faith, our God transcends gender, transcends sexuality, and is is manifested in a myriad of ways in our world. And being an LGBTQ plus person is one of the ways that I believe our creator brings beauty into the world. I, as a gay man, bring a beauty into the world as a gay man in relationship with Dan, as a bonus parent to our daughter, as a fur dad to my kids, is to my dogs, my friends. That's part of how I bring transcendent beauty into the world. A trans person, a non-binary person, a lesbian, a bisexual. We have all these different manifestations of beauty and relationship, I believe, from our creator. And why would we want to cure something that's not broken? And I get where people are coming from with that. Unfortunately, I believe that for over two decades. But what I'm here to tell you is all that that conversion therapy and toxic theology brings is death, destruction, and danger. Whereas if you just accept the truth that God has LGBTQ plus children as well, you can enjoy that beauty. You can affirm people, and it's going to be a much healthier, much more joyful experience for everyone involved.
Well, now you can tell us the truth now. So are you allowed to listen to Madonna and all that stuff now? Are you going to clubs and dancing up a storm and all that?
You know what? Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, people say all the time, Madonna made them gay. I'm old enough to say, no, Bo and Luke Duke from the Dukes of Hazzard made me gay. Because if you ever watch him slide across the General Lee,
You know, Madonna doesn't make people gay, just like Lady Gaga, any of that. She just sings a lot of songs that people, it's sort of supportive. She had a lot of good songs.
No, I'm teasing. Yes, I know.
But yeah, that's great. So so you're living a free and pretty good life. And how has it been going around in public and doing things? It's been pretty good for you, or not really?
Just like in day-to-day stuff?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's been good. You know, it's been interesting because now that I'm open out and all that other stuff, I'm going to hold Dan's hand in public if I want to. You know, and unfortunately, you know, even here in Orlando, which is very open and accepting, we get called names there about four times, I guess, over the time that we've been together. And so that part, as far as being targeted for being gay men, that's something the LGBTQ plus community is more than used to, unfortunately. So that still happens. But I love it that, like, where I work now, people ask about him. And it's not some weird thing. It's not, oh, look, it's Randy the gay guy. It's like, hey, Randy, how's Dan doing? You're getting ready for your wedding? You know, it's just normal stuff, and I love that. And I never had that before.
Where do you work now?
I work for a very large telecommunications cable company.
Okay. And congratulations on your wedding, by the way.
Thank you very much. I'm very excited. It's my first one.
Oh, very exciting. Yeah.
And hopefully my only one.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you don't want to hope for more than one. That's, right. You know, that's too much work anyway.
I came out twice, and that's not recommended at all. So I just want to be married once. So,
yeah. How is it with your family?
I'm very glad you asked. It's so much better now. It's been quite the journey. Like when I came out in 2015, my mother was not happy. But since I started dating Dan, you know, I intentionally didn't try to force anything on her, but I would, like when she would call or I call her, she'd ask me how I'd do it. I always included how Dan and our daughter was doing. And I think that really kind of helped her see that it's just normal. And she and my stepfather are so far planning on being at our wedding. So that's a huge, huge thing for our relationship. And we've been able to communicate more honestly now for quite a while. But that's a big deal for us.
Hmm. Were they quite religious, your parents or your family?
Actually, they weren't. I mean, my mother was raised as in a it's literally called Primitive Baptist Church in rural Tennessee, but she left that at a young age. So we never were. We were Christians, but it was only nominally. So we weren't raised in the church.
Hmm. Do you have any brothers, sisters, or anything like that?
I do have a younger brother and three nieces. And yeah.
It's going okay with him, like everything?
He's always been affirming. Yeah, so it along those lines, it's going great.
Hmm. Now, where do you want people to write in, find you, get a hold of you, or communicate with you?
Sure. They can find me at my blog at randythomas.blog.blog. And on there you have all my social media links as well as a contact form if you want to contact me directly, privately. You can do that there as well.
Hmm. We'll have that linked up as well.
Thank you.
So people can do one click and find you. And, you know, everything's good. You have your Grindr site on there too, or
you know what?
one wedding out. One wedding. Oh, well,
I always got to ask. You never know.
Right.
Maybe he's had one that he doesn't use anymore.
Right. just for display purposes.
Yeah. Maybe the two of them use it. Come on.
Right. Yeah, that's true. You know, I have to have an open mind.
You are just trying to get me in trouble.
That's what I'm about. I'm known for that.
I think I definitely deserve some acclaim for the during the Dukes of Hazzard references. I didn't say anything about the Confederate flag, so we didn't open that can of worms yet. I'm just playing around with it.
Well, see, see, the thing is it took me two seasons to figure out Daisy was actually a recurring character, so I didn't notice the flag.
I was
too busy looking at other things.
Yeah, fair enough. Fair enough. There's the correlation. I mean, not to overreach in the whole thing. There's a correlation between being closeted and being homophobic. I mean, correct?
Yeah. Very true. Absolutely.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, it's just, I don't know. People deal with things like gay has been a hot point for a while, and people deal with it differently. You know, it's also who you grew up amongst and who's around you at the time, your friends, your school. There's a lot of things that get involved. I was always lucky because I was growing up in school in Vancouver in Canada, and it was pretty open. So
different world,
you know.
Yeah, it's not luck of the draw on so many levels, like your environment and your culture. And
Yeah. You know, go to grad with a guy.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
that's just you know, that was unheard of across the border. Well, it's been great. So we really appreciate you taking the time, and hopefully the backlash isn't too bad. Mm-hmm. I'm sure there will be some.
Yeah,
I'm looking for it. And anyway, our guest has been Randy Thomas from Pray Away and Exodus. Thank you for being here.
Thank you very much for having me. I really enjoyed the conversation.
You've been listening to the House of Mystery radio show. To find out more about our guests, hosts, or shows, go to www.houseofmystery.com.
Show is over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Yeah. Good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.